This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Well, that could be hiding in that line, but I'm not going to contradict you at all. Let's go through here to see what does happen in the poll. Because part of what, when you have meeting, you have total meeting, you find a pattern down here. As I said, this one didn't turn out to be really total meeting because it didn't go off. And so, all lords of intensity, initiative, catastrophe, the star observed by Tycho Brahe in 1572, visible in bright daylight, the star recorded by Chinese astronomers in the year 1054, and the star of our Lord into the Holocaust to Helium, the ravenous spirit sends out its hundreds. My feeling is that this is a feeling of this kind of tonal melody through it. It's much more a feeling of a dance of beats, of different changing of. What I feel mainly are those contrasting things like intensity, initiative, catastrophe, and then words like observe, and names like Tycho Brahe, for instance, where it's set. So you have a really sort of gibbery pattern of a complicated, already established.
You don't have a sense that whatever that sound is in Lords, that led you to a number of the other sounds.
That others would lead into it.
Well, just what you're talking about here, but this is not the same as what you're talking about on the board.
No. It begins to recur in the queen that draws in the dark feeds on the death of stars. There it is there. The queen feeds is what I'm talking about. But it isn't what I used to go through like that in some sense. And there is not a Pound introduced it because stressed this business of the tone meeting involved. He mentioned it, I think. First in culture, I'm not sure where it starts. In the images stage, the most way out thing they did was just say right by the musical phrase. But in culture, it's mid-30s, and I think at that time he talked about tone meeting, and it was an observation that something was going on comparable to the earlier idea of full rhyming. That there was a tonal organization. You see it most when you get poems where it isn't present at all. And in this anthology, you have quite a number of poems. Let's say in a structure like Ginsberg, where you've got to have long lines piling up and rising in a stereo, you can't have this kind of activity because this kind of activity is just opposite of this kind of rise. It's dependent on the fact that we will not erase the sounds at the beginning, and you can't get a great booming going on because you've got to hear two things operating, and even three, and keep that opportunity open. But these are all things that begun because we're going further and further in American and free verse. The French really, were well out on the ideas of free verse by the time of Mallarmé, and modern French poetry just simply doesn't face the general complexion we still have, critical complexion we have, for instance, of the difficulty of over and over again winning a place for free verse. As a matter of fact, Valéry has a kind of chic because he maintains he doesn't write free verse, and the people who admire him try to prove he does. Now, that's quite the opposite of what would happen in our country. Admire someone like Tom try to prove he doesn't, you see. But the free of free verse, and Charles, and also it's better to use open, means that you have to keep a whole series of open possibilities. Although there are many possibilities, one is going to be that they free of some intention. But free for me means free movements within this structure. And then you have to decide, then how was it was composing? If it wasn't in the old terms, what were the composers? But more than that, they weren't propositions that you're going to do in the future. They were things you already heard. The only time you're going to find any of these things is when you have a strong feeling that some passage of reform does have a melody, or a strong feeling that some passage of an activity, now for instance, warms up the activity in that poem, well, we'll right after I finish this little verse, we will take that poem and see if we can't find what it is in there. All you need is somebody feeling it, and then see if it's there. And by the time you see if it's there, you will find out what it is that is the organization in it. And whether it's vowels, or whether it's consonants, or whether it's some kind of a contour. I think it's contours in this, and I can show you a little more of what I mean by contours by getting an eraser playing on there.
Hey, could I ask you just one question? Would you say there's also a pattern of... It seems that you show us patterns of resemblances there. I wonder if you have patterns of disresemblance also.
Well, the reason I put patterns of disresemblances is because it really does seem to me that if one were quite aware of something, you could organize it. It would make possible to organize the passage more subtly when you organize it on these resemblances. But it would be in contrast, wouldn't it? I mean, feelings of contrast would be immediate. Does anybody have a feeling of that?
Yeah, I will answer. I think you're always doing contrast. You contrast to the similarities, and you get all the way through that.
You mean slight colorations of sounds?
No, I mean the actual consonants that are posited against each other, like Osiris and Sven, the O-S, and then you have members of one lifeboat gradually going from F to O, from a very short to a very long vowel, and this seems to me to be some sort of contrast maintained throughout the poem.
Well, this vowel, for instance, this vowel, the one, is the base vowel of our language. It's the one, when we get stuck on something and can't think of a word, we say, and the reason is because this sound at a definite pitch for each one of us is right in the second in the center of our vocal organization. So that in any poem, this is formed, as I once put it, if you really aren't listening to anything else, you're writing in the key of us. And sometimes this will happen in a poem. Now, of course, the opening of this poem, this begins with us, you see, and because it's not stressed, it doesn't turn to thee. And so one of the things that unconsciously I did here is that I didn't strike this sort of thing until I came up to here. This is our coloring, and it's a little different from the members. It is anyway. Rise again, scale up or into the nightboat. It's very possible that because I have thought quite a bit about this the fact that in order to have these other sounds well heard, this one had better not take over. That there was some almost conscious process postponing the occurrence of an up. And of course, I mentioned Osiris and such, but it still comes much later there, and they're kept more and more in the minimum, and kept almost in the same places. But there are poems. I have heard poems of young poets who are just beginning to get their rhythm, so they carry away and things begin to happen. And one of the first things when things do begin to happen, as you point out, is this one will start taking up the beat until you find the beat someplace else. And that's why, for instance, poets often like that in the others. So but you find Auden, for instance, extremely dependent upon a little pattern that's built up. Early Auden is built up of prepositional phrases, but prepositional phrases always provide this up, and you have this feeling that something's going on in it, and actually what's going on in it is this, he very seldom uses possessive, because he wants the possibility of the, or, when I was quite young and trying in an entirely different way to learn and get the feel of language. By the way, there's lots of other periods. There were periods when I did lots of other things learning. The qualities of words or something weren't learned in this school, and I'm trying to get they were learned long before when I would really play and try writing poems that were filled with alliterations or poems that were filled with sounds. And I still think that's certainly a valuable thing to do. Although now the thing that happens when you're in the study that for people can bypass it is that young people write off the winning and poems that appeal to our particular feeling of what a poem should be. And at the time when I was to our taste of our time, whereas at the time I was writing these other exercises, the most they could appear to me was exercises because they really didn't suit something I wanted. My whole feeling of a form was different, but I had no idea. I was learning the part of the form in something quite foreign. So instead of producing rather striking poems, as far as I was concerned, I was producing almost tedious poems only for learning purposes. I don't think it's necessary to learn it that way. I think you can learn it by observing what you're doing when you're already at work. There are exercises that I really still do, and that is the exercise of reading other people's poetry whenever whenever you feel something going on in a poem, you can find it. Well, let's stop now and see if you can find that.
Robert, Paul, we need to notice one thing about Osiris and that members of one life.
I was just wondering if you're working on an idea for sort of a tone roll or a tone cluster where you have your O, I, S as if.
Or if I had an ambivalence between again, I don't have an ambivalence between again toward either against or against. But if I did have an ambivalence, and there are in Latin American speech, there are, this would pull over in this direction. And it is, I have noticed, I have an ambivalence because Miss Keel that I actually was mad about when I was in high school that I wanted to write for the rest of my life for, she had a very elegant way of saying either. Well, now, it's not in any born days, but anything I was born into, just if anybody around me said either, but I really found a wonderful, well, I still have them. This E, I had to practice there was a very stunning girl with black hair who I thought was just beyond this world, and she made E's that way, and I can remember sitting up for hours, schooling this E out of my handwriting, and getting that E. And it's very, very seldom, only in weak and weary moments, that the old E ever comes back, because I was really only about 12 at the point in which I, and of course this one was also not permitted in school. It was not the one we were being taught. However, I do have a cultivated and then finally an actual speech ambivalence between either and either. And so patterns and poems will accommodate and certain sounds. So if it were possible, I just don't have that sound. The possibility of saying again. But if I did, this would be a real possibility. I did not see this pattern consciously that you mentioned, or perhaps something would have changed down here. What she's speaking of is something that I think accounts for the fact that I was not able to develop this third possibility, and it's really worth pointing out here. My consciousness in the poem could recognize the set members, but it did not recognize what she did, and that was an O, I, E, E, I, O. And had I been able to recognize that pattern, instead I was seeing the O, I, and then the E, E, but I wasn't putting it into this Foley pattern, but I did see the I, O. Recognize. Only what you recognize can really come into action, and if I've seen that pattern, I'm quite sure that that this area in here, before I even got to chaos, would have had to yield to some content. And the third line, this word could be a content, as a matter of fact, and this is where I mean meaning and sound together. So that if I really see the sound, it would have meant that this would become more complex than me, and this line would have had I could have said against, it would have been it, but it would have had such a stress that the against would have taken over too, and then this whole thing would be changed. But actually, I'm not capable yet. But thank you, I better practice this. But this is why, when I you see now, and after, if I see this, and thank, and somebody shows it to me, and then I see that that is actually a pattern I have once performed in a line, I can't. It's not conscious, but when I'm writing again, I'm the more prepared to recognize and develop this sort of thing. And if I don't recognize, I'm not prepared to develop it. And because you do lose the unconscious patterns in your poem. And the keeping is an activity. The keeping is a cooperation of the conscious mind with the unconscious. And the poem is not a simple unconscious process. It is the two together, and actually we find that the unconscious becomes vital when the conscious becomes flooded with it and uses it and cooperates. It's just as if the two are against each other, the unconscious seems to shrivel up. The experience, at least as the psychoanalysts at the present time take it, they still believe the unconscious is vital, but the person feels it's not. But I really think, as poets feel, that the sea goes into the next tide and dries up. I don't mean your mind does, but everything dries up. And one of the things you're learning is the cooperation. No, it's quite enough to learn this cooperation. This is part of cooperation, to learn to participate in what it is that's going up in the form. Well, I feel like now I can start reading my own poem. Now, if you see if I could get three things in the beginning and then start the you have no idea how three things going on in the poem. Well, I'm just one more thing. I'm going to go on in 4 or 5 again.
Your feeling is, say, a poet who writes in conventional measures, not in conventional lines. Now, that this whole area is unavailable to such a poet, or what?
Oh no, I meant that. For instance, it depends on what you think the convention is. But I think that this develops because this kind of thought is developing. This area, for instance, demanded this kind of form. But let's say other things are unavailable, the if that would be available in certain. Yeats is good. Since he is a poet, when I mean convention, I'm thinking of people who, when they're writing, are thinking of being conventional, and there's now a great set of poets to whom it's important to be conventional. Yeats didn't think he was being conventional. He had conventions exactly like he had them in his religion, which was a hermetic brotherhood, and they had rituals, and they had certain things they did. He was ritualistic, and he had to find the thing that fitted. If you read Yeats, everything that he really did have an idea that that when he found where a word went, let's say in a form, it was quite comparable to finding. It was quite comparable to keeping something in our mind, and then something would happen. Disobeying the rules of a definite right that other people performed in the same way. And he went over and over again on poems, not to fit words into the convention, but having to find the members that belonged in this. And he could write sonnets as a consequence because he didn't believe they were a convention. He believed they were a magical form in which things had to really be fit and work. And he didn't have any choice. One of the earmarkers for me of the convention of the present the school that has dominated in teaching in schools about poetry and has dominated, for instance, in the school masters who write poetry is their idea that the poet's own powers and the poet's own choice and the poet's own cleverness is what matters. It's what happens. But it's a matter of cooperating with the thing, and in a way you come to tune. I don't really know very much about what. Because Yeats didn't place great importance. He didn't write anything about sonnet per se, or about the quatrain forms that he used per se. But my feeling is that you certainly, when you see him trying a word again and again and again, you see him trying words, not choosing them, trying to see what they do, trying to see what's happening. And then when it happens, the word's the thing that happens, not something bright about Mr. Yeats.
we're not getting off on content again, but one of the other things, again, that one has is that you just do not do things with words. Words are real things, and when they are in a place, when you can see what it is they're doing and you cooperate with them, then something unfolds, and you can feel it in you, but it's really unfolding in the language. And you have suddenly entered a realm so much larger than your own mind, because the language is all of human experience. And potentially, absolutely in the medium of the human language, you step out of your own bounds where you come from, wherever you come from, your own feeling of being from San Francisco, or your own feeling of having crossed eyes or whatever, and you're suddenly in an entirely different world, because the language doesn't have crossed eyes, you know, it doesn't, and it has everything. And the great ultimate of that is Shakespeare, where is he, you know? Is he really, worry about it, decide whether Lady Macbeth is Shakespeare's, or some aspect of Shakespeare or something, or will you be lost? There are too many people there. So the conventional form, I don't have, let's say, Williams always say, you know, sort of, how, why do a sonnet? But that's because he's taking a sonnet as a conventional form. Whether sonnet is a sonnet, I don't believe the person writing a sonnet in a conventional form at all. As a matter of fact, they behave in a very different way. Gerard Manley Hopkins pays no attention to the syllabic count, and Shakespeare pays no attention to the stress count. Yates did pay attention to these because he wanted an order over it. And that's a very different order over someone. You must know this law and order and all sorts of things coming over and over again in my poetry. If I've got this kind of form anyway that I travel, it's not because it's the one that I'm fascinated by. However, when I write a sonnet, I tend, like everybody else today, to think they're conventional, and then I haven't written any sonnets for a long time, but when I did, and my teens, they were awful. Put away. I want to take that poem that you said you had some feeling, and it's worse than 38. Just the first one. My own feeling when I wrote this poem was not very. My feeling of the form of the poem was not as immediate in every part of the poem, and not as intense as in the two passages we just looked at. These poems seem sketchy to me in some way, and yet I don't mean that they weren't there. The poems seem loose, and it seemed to me that they were in a phrasing, and that's at least before we can start looking at it. I have a vague kind of feeling of what their form is instead of a real observation. So let's just take O large of intensity. Because the form is really potential in the opening line, and then begins to develop in the following line of any of these. You're true. Here's some of our play, but it isn't picked up in the mouth, and you know, it doesn't move quite as this is an echo, a little formation, not a tiny. But that I sound is always picking up, and you can see the Chinese picks it up. Our old friend in here. well enough. Got a little interesting, must say, some a little remark about content here. Just last month, I found in a bookshop book by, I'd never read any Rudolf Steiner before. He's one of those way out theosophists who have really wild ideas about evolution and so forth. And it looked goody. It had all sorts of things like moon beings in it and things. So I bought it, and for all the fact that there's a picture in him, it looks like one of those awful people who want to, you know, he's the regular Ancient Mariner type, and you never grab you by the shoulder and tell you how it really is. But among the many things he told that it was really was that our spirit, doing this field reading Gamow's, all of Gamow's books, and the Holocaust of Helium are sunspots. And then the spirit of the person thinking of them are drawn to them, or the sun worship go out to search the sun. Send out its own hunters toward this thing, and that thing exchanged life. But when I came to this book last month, just before I came up here, I read through the section about the lords of the sun, and it says that the lords of the sun draw spirits of men, of certain men from the earth, and they, in a sense, are taught in the sun itself and fed in the sun itself when they are sleeping at night, where most of the spirits of the majority of men go to the moon and are fed by lords of the moon. So you see, you can sometimes find, but actually, my tendency in the field was going over much of the same material, much of the same world of Blake and capitalism. This wild way out here, theosophical book of Rudolf Steiner's was growing on, so that it was so that this had a common source, but not any other place I've ever come to this statement. So I suddenly saw somebody saying the same thing I meant to say in this line. The queen, by the way, and that's one is a bee, a queen of a hive of the human spirit. So we did see there was this is present in here, but what I was thinking of in writing it was this thing of intensity, catastrophe. I've got to get the stresses right on the intensity. Well, at least, let's pay no attention to the rest of the sentence, but I want to show degrees of stress, so we're going to make this number one, intensity. And this will venture into two, and these must be like that. Well, then catastrophe may lead us to a clearer. Catastrophe is also a one, and catastrophe. And this is a three and two, perhaps. Isn't as simple as, now Initius also has this accent. Now you see, a linguist would really arrive at this interchange of patterns if we're trained to quite get. You see, there are more degrees here, and it's important in recording speech to get it right, the difference between the getty and the trophy, catastrophe. Catastrophe. You need to really accent it more than and then watch the duration of syllables with one of the little keys Pound gave along with that tone leading a vowel, and that really is what makes these. It is impossible in such a short syllable to have a greater stress. The minute there is a greater stress, the syllable of the it lengthens, and the it is a change of has much more mobility of character, as a matter of fact, because it can exist in different stress. Or observed by Tycho Brahe. Tycho Brahe is another such area. Tycho Brahe.
well, it must be the one here, Taco Brahe, and this must be a two, and this is so perhaps. Astronomers is an excellent astronomer. Now, why is it I'm running into a whole series maybe somebody's quicker than I am, of four-syllable words where the dominant accent is on the end of, you know, five? Is this a law in Ireland, like Greek or something? I mean, do we have another four-syllable word? It wouldn't be true. I mean, astronomers. But what I mean is that this is the pattern that is beginning to go through with you.
So taking Taco Brahe is one word. Don't you really say there's more action on the second word?
Taco Brahe. Now, I think I have the typo. Because of the rhyme. Because the type coming to this daylight exchange. I think, I'm not sure, at least for me, typo is such a kind of thing that the Brahe just falls away.
One of the interesting things is the way in which personal reading can interfere with this, because most English people don't take catastrophe the way Americans do. They take, particularly if they're affected, catastrophe.
Oh, and of course, but then, now, for instance, I cannot read English poetry at all. I mean, I feel like about the English poetry like the English feel about William Carlos Williams. I mean, in William Carlos Williams, the thing is so attuned at this level that Americans, if they don't have, for instance, people in speech departments die, fall flat on their face, and ask you, what in the world is that? And people who aren't speech departments, but let's say reading short of beginning to pick this up, poets have really gotten to reading in a monotone in order to keep even related to what, but they were nervous about what the common speech was and what was their relation to it, because they were still measuring like this. But once you start consciously making like that, your own voice can begin to use again, because it recognizes that our daily speech has measures. There's a wonderful indication of the fact that Williams really had no idea of measure in the linguistic sense. Although, for instance, recently when Eliot said that poetry shouldn't be taught, and that nothing in modern poetry should be taught in the schools, and an ordinance believed that all the time, William said, yeah, but they should teach linguistics. They should teach, they should try to find out the way it's really measured. And in the magazine, the same magazine Origin, William delivered a blast with a whole bunch of it, and he said, none of you know, young poets know anything about, or your poems lack measure. Well, I knew that couldn't be true. It would be like this room lacking measure. You see, this room actually does have measure. But we say that the architect has measure or lacks measure when and if he's aware of it, when and if he's conscious of it and can deal with the ratios and proportions that are possible, if you understand that the room is so, the actual dimensions of the room. And I already was somewhat aware, because I had begun hunting for it in linguistics, that there was no such thing as speech without measure. It all had measure, but there was such thing as people not observing it and not actually developing it in any way. And this is one of the things that actually began to intrigue me more and more. And then, do you see one how on the level of stress something's happening that was very much like what was happening in tone reading? A pattern is coming down, and you're having a repetition, but it's a rhythmic reoccurrence. And these rhythmic reoccurrences are set, and when you change languages or even areas. See, I'll have another advantage is that in California, we speak what's called, because of the set in Chicago, the study of language, basic American, it's a sort of American norm, and it is not viewed in itself as a dialect, and the other areas are. We have very few dialect terms. I mean, the few elements in my speech that is dialect are really a personal nasalization, although it may be area, I'm not sure. And some left over the camp, which I mean horribly fun reading at times. But if I'm really in tune, it is just the nasalization that departs from this normal American
although the foreigners always think this is legalizing, it's not part of the structure. Perhaps maybe Bloomfield leaves it out completely, because he also feels the nasalization shouldn't be mentioned, but it's perfectly important. And Holocaust. The Holocaust is what? Holocaust. This is still, this forms one pattern here, so we've got a much more complex one. Yeah. Into the Holocaust. Oh, thank you.
But is there anything we see there?
Not really.
Well, we actually, the first Holocaust was really intimate, which we don't have before those non-words.
At the same time, the second Holocaust. The same as the other words, other long words. And this almost existed in catastrophe, the
Holocaust. Well, no, it isn't. It actually has the first address, but because of the other,
Oh, I see. So, I mean, if we take this stress and forget what happens in here in some way, we've got a comparable pattern in a new. But anyway, this is a development then, and it's begun. It's broken down here. But and this one, of course, these two are really related. And this one repeats back with back. And what happened here? Now, Tycho Brahe was just. Even if we put our stress over here, Tycho Brahe is not a relation. It is not a member of that series, although it belongs together. You have only individual alternatives in pronouncing a name I'm going to put the stress one place, not shift it in different situations. I can't change the meaning in the name in order to change the stress. Does anybody have any more? There's something I think the ravenous may possibly relate back to this. So the one thing you can form, there are two things. These all form various sets, and any three, four, and so forth, syllable words as a set pattern. And if there's a particle like the, it usually comes into a set pattern, but it can be shifted. Well, now I'll show you now you see what you can do with line division. You can even change the stress and pitch in a word like this. By doing something like this. And so now instead of having intensity, we have intensity. And this is happening with the junctures at ends of lines. You see, once you saw, and as a matter of fact, a line is changing the character. Now, when I read the medieval scenes, I didn't read it very well last night because I find it more and more difficult to read my poetry previous to the time when I started having a line be an absolute structural element instead of only a time element. And actually, I have to now, of course, once I began to observe that. I tried reading the other, tried overcoming my. You see, when I changed to really go after this stuff, I thought of my early stuff then all of a sudden as being somehow on the wrong track, and then and that it was just I just didn't like reading at all. I had to, for instance, in order to begin hearing new things, not go back into the old business of a continuum. That's what I call it. Mostly, and for instance, in the period when I was writing in a rhapsodic style, those things I couldn't even, I just didn't put in selected poems because I just found I couldn't take things related. I couldn't yet relate them to the whole, to the totality. And when they do come, or if they do come into the sense of fervor, then I would again draw them into the whole thing. But medieval scenes in some sense did. Structurally, however, the reading was poor the other night because I still, in many places, was reading those lines as if they had junctures at the end, which they don't. And I think you heard me read, when I read on campus last year, I read a poem, a long poem,
in which I used both this form and the older continuum form, and that was, as a matter of fact, goes rather close to Yeats in a stanza form. It's almost regular, and that was in the poem Apprehension, where I contrast and use both kinds of verse. I will read the one movement of it in which both of these are shown for those of you that didn't hear it, but you'll also, just to give you a hearing in broad of the change between two very valid things in the two modes, because we have been sort of fighting it out as if this was the true blue way of doing it, and we better not have any traffic with that old stuff, and we've had our questions then about what do you think a convention is too. The convention is a way of looking at it, but there are different modes in poetry, and then it becomes possible to use several modes. And by the way, the prose poem is a mode in poetry, and it's a mode in poetry that, as far as I know, this is for people who do know more literature, can give help. But that is, I think, the beginning of the prose poem is in Poe. In certain pieces of Poe, and that's totally I've got it from Poe. But are there earlier prose poems that are borrowed from it? I don't know. It's the earliest I know, anyway. They don't seem to me. The thing about a prose poem is it builds it in itself, in the way it is written, has a particular rhythm, and begins to take on qualities of rhyme and so forth. Whereas Blake's, I'd have to actually read the contrast between Mary that Heaven Hell and these two pieces of poems.
Boy, if you look at prose in the poetry research, it's cosmic.
The thing I'm thinking of prose are little short things. To me, right strikes in prose form. They're almost they're among short stories, but they're very, very brief, and they just evoke a person and an ambience that seems to have to do with poetry. I'm just going to read the second movement from this poem because it contrasts deliberately. It begins. And this is not in one of the books you've got. I go to touch the second. This is a poem that I read this spring when I was here, and it appeared in Evergreen or whatever. I don't know. Unfortunately, we put dirty pictures on it, and then it's so it was pretty good. And I was suing them for having made the whole thing sort of filthy, so I think the poem didn't get really circulated outside the room. What? But this movement is written in the old mode, the one that I've been looking at it often in talking. It sounded like I was really attacking and trying to prohibit. And the first movement is written in the mode that we've been in the general mode we've been discussing. The directive is a building. The architecture of the sentence allows personal details, portals, reverence, and enchanting. Instructions from what lies at hand to stand for what rings true. His concentration fixes this island, a space figured in language by where it's placed, tower, and here bridge to the world. How they plow the given field in rows, prose and verses, and brought landscape into being. The grove interpreting and interpreted by the house and heart, a grave expectation. Provides for the dome of many-colored glass, jeweled light, carved woods, and deep windows. Neat hush of the high hall, and from above is deep a well or wall of Holy Spirit, and finally humble. Where there is a temple, man is kept in base servitude. Let my all be steady, and the rude elements of my household, like the wind of the rose vine. Sage architect, you who awaken, the proportions and scales in the world, soul's wonder, of stars and water, beams of color, that save the cumulus of the rising, yet direct, discreet light is finding the link. The bell's tide in the foliage ring as the wind rises.
I found the monument of what I am around me as if waiting were a dream, a house built in the ancient time when man like a salmon swam in currents of fire and air in what he was, leapt to the ladders of desire and read in the screen before there were letters deep reflections of his cause. There must be a pool, dark and steady, moved stone and water with its magic crossing, its ray of a star catches and flow, another time of what we always are, from which we start up into a delight jewel, see joy hid where death most is, ready like a seed encased in its shell. Oh, let the shadows and the light rays meet. Sage, architect of the soul and its image, let there be a household of these things where such a silence awakened our fearful dust. And flames of beauty and old stuff rage. I have to come into a loneliness and get into a room whose builder remembers that love stands alone and works in his timbers and rude poetry, both in the presence and weight of that cross. The king brings his old body into his monument in which we are remembered, lonely, bare, one being, one present, so slowly restoring the house of his kin. The aged wood shines in the light, surrounding and enclosing and shining our eyes, bells tied in the foliage, rings and wind drums. Now, if you look at the page and see right away, what happens in the second part of this movement is that I begin writing in four-line stanzas, regular stanzas, and that those stanzas continue until there's an extra two-line preparatory to the two-line close, which is So that the line which appeared in bell tied in the foliage ring as the wind rises in the first section, which is in the mode of open verse, in this closed verse form bell tied in the foliage ring as the wind rises, and I hope that hopefully you got the change in mode, how it sounds, because I didn't try to exaggerate the movement of the first one, although the movement of the first one is measured something like the dance is in the volume field, or the part of the dance is also in that anthology. That is, it has short lines of two syllables and long unmeasured lines, and a lot of terminal junctures that leave you in suspense, so I'm able to put stresses in a sentence of construction in syncopated position. Whereas in the other one, you notice the whole thing that was now, let's forget about the whole thing that opened up in the regular stanzas of form was this kind of continuum that went through. But you can also see what could happen, what can't happen in that continuum. You can't, in the same way, play one thing off against another. Where in the structure of them, where the ideas are, where the phrases are very clear and separate, we have to trace the relationships with the sound. In the continuum, we're more aware of the relationships with sound. But everything else seems to be lost somewhat in the rush. You don't have you don't get these isolated, seemingly disparate things appearing. The changes, let's say, that are allowed for how they follow the given field and road. Those are verses yesterday we discussed about pro and verse ideas. So that one of the reasons for developing this is something like the thing we were talking about done in the interim. It's something like the form, the thing that happened. Done also had to give a particular kind of sharp staccato quality because he wanted to introduce a structure, a different structure of ideas, and have you aware of these illustrations as they went on, and not of an emotional continuum. So he broke it up and made it very abrupt, and you have increased consonants to help with that in a form of Dunn's, and you also have very sharp and separated illustrations so that you don't get a flow of images. But a flow, something like a flow of images is in the open construction that I use, so that there were flowing relations between Osiris, light, both, and the troll things that come later. All right, what did you say you want?
Oh, just that someone mentioned that
there was three tomorrow. Oh, well, yes, but we might demonstrate a thing or two from Creeley about the construction of a verse. Now, Creeley, you'll notice in here, and I think he had a lot to do with selection of the poems, because Don Allen, for instance, was not really familiar with Creeley's work and was persuaded by almost everybody else finally to by the assistance of both Olson and myself to get Creeley, and I don't know how much he had to do with selecting the poems in Creeley. One of the first things you notice, and now turn to page 77, where you have kind of act of Creeley talking about his own poetry and about the meaning of a line, had a very different sense of a line than I do. Now, my sense of the juncture in a line is linguistic center. That is, I talk about a juncture and degrees of juncture, and I locate them and make them, really make them somehow within the range of our speech, although they appear rather odd, the terminal juncture, the ones at the end of the line. But Creeley has an aesthetic concept of the meaning of the end of the line, and he said that a line and this just absolutely got outraged the faculty of the University of California to the point where they thought he was a word charlatan, they'd ever had it appeared there, but he was quite in earnest. He said that the meaning of an end of the line, as far as he was concerned, was that a line was so integrally part of a poem as a fragment of a vase was part of a vase, that when he reached the end of the line, he could walk out of the auditorium and run around the block for his own benefit and come back and go on reading the poem, and it would not have harmed the total poem anymore. Well, if you're aware, a fragment, once it belongs to a poem like this, let's say of a Greek vase, it gives such an intimation of the total poem that there's not too much disagreement about what the total poem is if you've got the fragment. You can recognize almost immediately if you have a bit. Well, let's say the condition of the winged victory without her wings. There are people who want to run in, or is it her head or whatever, you know, want to run in and supply it, or the arms of the Venus de Milo with a talc or gender or something is one of those foolish quarrels because a form exists in all of its parts. And if it does, all right. Anyway, so it's an aesthetic point of view that Creeley has about giving the line, the lines really appear, and if they get fragmented, and he likes to read them, exaggerating, again, something he heard in Dr. Williams, and on his part, not associating his ideas about speech habits and the way I tended to talk anyway, in his part, it was an aesthetic idea. And in Olson, for instance, it was his own physical breath that seemed to him the reason of them. I mean, he's a short-breath man, and you need a line like that. Well, now, that's not what you're doing. And for instance, my own interpretation of the possibility of this line. But you see what's happening. Three different people have three different explanations for it. But what is actually happening is that we all have useful now the line as having a terminal juncture for whatever reason we as having a society. So I can get Creeley's way of swinging this thing. Oh, also in the interim, I was questioned about, well, how much does this depend on the regional? The region that is concerned with these different ways of reading is exactly like the region. It's exactly the regional thing that Stravinsky had, and what is concerned is just the region of the fact that we are real organisms. That is, I can no more produce a rhythm when I come to my own rhythm. If I'm going to come to that rhythm and depart from, let's say, the community of rhythms, for instance, existed in music up until Mozart, and Mozart already started disturbing it. But you had a mode in which everybody could compose, and there was an area within that mode that was understood. Of course, it didn't continue with the Middle Ages. They were always disturbing when you come to the Burgundian courts of the, and Stravinsky likes to go back to them. The Burgundian courts of the 13th, 14th century were monkeying around with modes, and they didn't even have this idea of that mode that everybody's going to behave according to. But when they did, then you really could get very bold senses, like they have heightened quality by just kind of the way you would operate within this mode. But Mozart already begins to want to break out of it, sound something that's out of the system, and Beethoven breaks it all down. It holds it. And then you get a stamp that says, you even get a stamp, a signature of some kind of personal insistence in rhythm, and that's part of what the romanticism was. The first, in fact, in romanticism, you feel as if individuals were fighting for their rights or something. As a matter of fact, they thought they were. But part of it is, as you have such a larger and larger human community, we have a more and more intense sense of the meaning of some inner actual being of ourselves, in a small community, and I did like living in Stinson Beach, there were only about 400 people. That meant by the time I left in 3 years, everybody did know each other. I understand that you don't necessarily know your neighbors here, but there you did. And although they were different people, you were the member of a community. Now, this is like a mode. Actually, all of your affairs begin to go, instead of going in your own pattern, go in the pattern of the town of Stinson Beach, and it becomes much more valuable, really, as far as living goes, than any individuality in your household. But now I'm back in the city, and the thing the city gives you is an intense individuality about the way you live in your own house. And you select, instead of having the general community of man, it seems to be, at present time, they think it's about 50 individuals, as far as the picture of what his real community feeling is. Whereas, for instance, for baboons, it's 200. Well, then imagine what it means in a city of millions. You have a great selectivity to form this 50 people, and you can keep reforming it. The poems are doing this in a way. And so you have a more and more intense feeling of how individual, I mean, it becomes my community instead of my community, if you get what I mean. In a city, you're selecting friends. In a city like San Francisco, you select a community that's so much your own business of selecting of the community that they seem to serve at every point. Your intense individuality. Now this stamp then, the region that this belongs to, is not really just the region of speech, but the kind of thing that makes an oak an oak. I mean, and Pound is the one when poetry begins to have this line. He gets it from Paracelsus, to whom it was also exceedingly important, and from Pacino and Pico de Mirandola at the Renaissance. The Renaissance is the first influx of great increases of population, and a great increase is of the possibility of correspondence of man of kindred spirits. The difference between living in the medieval world, when you were bound to your class or bound to your little town, and living in the Renaissance world, when the commerce and exchange of men brought together the first universities, for instance, and the first great congregations of men of kindred spirits, is that your region became a region of spirit. And so that these things, this change that's taking place, while it has different reasons with men from different parts of the country even, or different individualities, is a change in spirit. And that's what we're locating in a way. In the thing happening quarter. And it certainly won't be shared by all men. Such a thing never was. I mean, the Platonism, Plato's own academy was finally absolutely stamped out that following Plato, and Pacino died of the lack of interest of men in even trying to conquer Greece in the height of the Renaissance, and also the whole, except they laughed because they're kindred men all, I mean, in all centuries. Well, so we're talking about the same thing, but Creedy has a very different picture of it. And that is that you could just stop and baby cake and go back and read the rest of it. All right. But he's great. Now I've got to hear his voice a bit. See if I can hear a feel of it. But maybe I'll just have to do my own way of going at him. Giving oneself to the dentist or doctor who is a good one to take a complete possession of mind. There is no giving. The mind, besides the act of any dispossession, is lecherous. There is no more giving in, and there is no more sin. And I can't get it right, exactly right. I wish I could give you the tone, because there's a great deal of charm in his own tone, anything. But now, one thing that you must notice right away that's distinctively different from either Olson or myself, since he works with the form of a stanza, that is sufficiently close to the lyric tradition, and we become aware that the first stanza has three lines and the second two, and we become aware of contrasts of line length, much more so than, let's say, I would say unmeasured line and a little measured one or something, and that's a little more regular than this. But here we become we really do have three different line lengths, and they're not organized, they're playing. For one thing, Creedy keeps the margin is vital in all of this business. And we always go back to the same reference point, and we've got a different length line moving up from that length. So we are really aware, because they're all in the same order, of the fact there's a different length. Because, let's say, when I have what might be a contrasting short line, it really is a line in a different order. And also the shorter areas really were in a different order, as I could run the board the other day. But here the short line, to take complete possession of mind, there is no
giving, the mind, beside the act of any dispossession, is lustrous. There is no more giving in when there is no more sin. All of those have a much more of a play between each other than they do in either the case of Holmes and myself. Now, another characteristic of Creeley is he doesn't, it is the play and not the building up of some big organization of an idea. And Creeley, as a matter of fact, Holmes was about ready to bet there wouldn't be any appearance of a matter. I mean, you know, he said, oh God, he's still right about those dirty towels, you know. But Creeley learned on an almost minimal content and matter his terms for this lyric feeling. And then you have in this thing where Creeley begins to, and they were almost, well, this is one of the most, this one I have over and over, it's one of the really real poems realized in this whole period that we're going to talk about. I'd like to think there's some poem of mine that ever was, but this one is, and that's The Warning on page 78. Well, love, I would let open your head and put a candle in behind the eye. Love is dead in us if we forget the virtues of an annual quick surprise. Now, this is almost back in the lyric tradition of Herrick or the thing that follows done when you started to clear and got the song. We're getting close again to the song, although you were separated from the real song of Campion or the song, the period when they actually were playing the musical instrument. And the intricacy of it, as a matter of fact, again, it was a student in a workshop at Black Mountain, not myself, who found this poem for me. I just sort of read these things and, yeah, that's pretty good or something. But when we have to, I have to present one session, an image, and Eloise Mixon brought this as an image and analyzed this whole exchange of the candle and then I used it the next week to demonstrate how concentrated the sound pattern of this poem. Now this would be an example of taking up the interim talk about a dialect. I do not at all have the actual regional dialect that Creeley has, because Creeley is New England, of New England. He's the ninth generation, sixth generation of Harvard, and the first one in six generations not to graduate from Harvard, which is the kind of thing to achieve. And his family never moved from the town in New England where it was installed until Creeley, after drunkenly getting kicked out of Harvard, married this wealthy girl who went off to Europe. They were just, as a matter of fact, there four of them were doctors, and they were, Creeley sin, and I'm going to look back here, there's no more giving in when there is no more sin, is acutely revolved around family tradition thing. But, so it's my own sounds that I'm happy to go on for this pattern of thinking. For love, I would split open your head and put a candle in behind the eye. All right, then the whole second verse is going to play all over again another time. Love is dead in us if we forget the virtues of an animal and quick surprise. I mean, even the rhymes and the, I've done this pattern and now it's almost lost me. It's plenty of things like the split through to the forget and amulet, for instance, that were positive. There were exchanges between the two verses.
Are we still working in a, you say Creeley's a lyric, would you identify him as basically a lyric poet?
Yeah.
In the tradition? Mm-hmm. Is this still free verse within your own category of free verse?
Yes, for instance, I don't think it's made it actually. For love, I would is a four
syllable. It's syllabically major. Let's just think it's syllabically major, and it's a two, and it's accented by the fact that it really does have a juncture in the middle. And probably even less they thought of it in Caesarea could put a dash. I mean, you know, but so it opened your head, and of course, it's Greene doesn't put any Caesarea in that line. But open your head and put. And suddenly that's what we begin to get our count, because this moves to a six all the way through, and we've got and look, the monosyllables, plain monosyllables and two syllable words, because the open and split open is your. And the open comes in candle in the second one, so that this 2-2 has been changed to a 1-2-1 by the word candle. As this thing has been changed, this one is goes 1-2-1-1 in order to make 3. 1-2-1-2-3 to make a 6. And I think behind the eyes it again goes down to this. It's a 2 and 1-1. But I meant candle behind then comes here and plays. And this happens. The only other thought I know of this happens is acutely the business of the fact that you begin to register monosyllables against disyllable words is in Eisner. But you can see it's because this is a part of what happens in a lyric, because the lines are really, you are feeling the play of these numbers. And you feel the play of the numbers, now in marrying more, you feel the play of total syllabic counts of lines, and she's not lyric in this sense. In this sense, you really hear, the music you hear is the play of the recognized play of grouping. And then love is dead enough, in the second one, is a 5-line, And if we project, goes back to the 4 and it's got this thing, because I'm trying to show that a little pattern here, meaning goes open, candle, forget. And these little words are the ones that come to this, a form this type, and then the virtues of an amulet just out of after all that accumulation and quick surprise. And the virtues of an amulet is such an accumulated line after the simpleness of candle and the simpleness of split open your head and almost immediately start thinking of a pumpkin and a pumpkin head made and then something violent hidden and then this chart and these chart lines of the amulet and the exchange of rhyme, because forget an amulet rhyme as you would ordinarily, and really almost as they would in a tradition, and then surprise the first line through the eyes of the clothes, really the clothes, almost to the platform of the clothes. Well, the playfulness is part of, let's say the free bird can be seen when he's working with comparable forms, but that he always can make a long line. It is not, what's free about it is that when he goes into a 7, line like love is dead in it. It is not a departure from its form. It is simply a playing against this, and it's one of those little surprises. We do not repeat. We play, and the thing that for him, and he likes quatrains and so forth. It gives him a permitted area in which these kinds of this kind of play, surprise play in turn, can happen. And so it is open. Now, let's say free verse, it is not what you call organic verse. This isn't building up like an organism. It's a song, a discrete little song. Now, I have some discrete songs, but I'm much clumsier about songs. I mean, for instance, the owl, and I have an awful time writing songs. Well, if I have a song that I sing, it's a little easier, but it still is, compared with this activity, just rudimentary.
Well, now, what is it that you so greatly admire about this?
It changes. And I see what we were noticing that I sort of admire in my own work when we find it, which is exchanges a vowel sound or a consonant sound, here happens at the syllabic level. Now look, I can only measure 3 syllables with any kind of, and what can you do with 3 syllables? I could kind of do something, except I've never been able to, I mean, I just, this is not my temper, and when I see somebody who can do this, or like Eisner, we might find this really in some other places, but Eisner especially, where the line is kept absolutely discreet, you're dealing with things from 2 to 7 syllables, all playing and all acutely
you're always acutely aware of it. So I think, oh, I'm just lovely, you know, and especially lovely to me because here I am, the boy who can manage me simple. And after that, it all kind of, I hope that I have a vague feeling, I think it's sort of maybe, well, here, this is the candle opening, you see, I guess. But all right, so I'm showing you something, but all of the fact I enjoy this here, it doesn't begin to play with me, for me, and I can't quite cooperate with it. So that finding it out won't always help you. I can't be sure that when Pauline shows me that thing I did, because I'm a little nearer if I did it in the form myself, you see, you're a little nearer home, you might possibly be able to begin to really operate at this level. But if it's in someone else's form, well, it needs to heighten your sense, I guess, and this is one of the sources that you play your own play.
You said there was a seven line there. What did you mean by a seven?
No, I mean there's a five.
A five.
That's a seven. That's a seven. That's the others are evens. Often evens. I mean, these number things are... nature is the play of numbers, and there are quite a few things that we're conscious of in number and form. We're very conscious of the number of lines and words in a short poem, and poets can always play with even measures and varying the number of words and create a sense of a liveliness in two different systems of numbers going at the same time. We all have a certain aptitude, especially within the lyric range. That's why we hear more music in the lyric, because we're all somewhat aware within a range of a four-syllable line that there are syllables operating. I can hear syllables operating up to five. If somebody operates like, well, Marion Moore does make me aware, but I'm not, but I really have to study it out to get this, because those are longer lines than I myself have a feel. She's really quite amazing at the business of performing on syllabic matrix. Well, give you a little hot spot of Marion Moore, but you. And Creeley, for instance, really absolutely was sent by Marion Moore. I mean, because she was right along his own line, I brought a record of it, and of course she was, Brooklyn has a slightly different, but she had some New England things that just sent him. And then that anybody who's going to perform like this was, let me find I know what it is. I really want to get to your novel. Content. He's just a tart iron. But Marion Moore, for instance, has a great difference. There's a great difference between Creeley and Marion Moore. Because while Creeley is going on syllables, he's varying, and Marion Moore literally repeats from stanza to stanza. There's no possible formal significance of a stanza in Marion Moore because meaning does not change it, nothing changes it. The lines are equally are counted out to reproduce conform. There's a difference between this is the difference. In the forms we've been talking about, it's a process of informing. That is, every particle of the poem informs the whole, and that happens on the level of sound, of meaning, of the measure, because you don't even conceive of the form outside of the interactivity of all the parts. Now, in a conforming form, and that was the one that had given that long mode to music between the courts in Burgundy and Mozart's beginning to break it up, the whole operation of music was kind of activity within a form. And everything related to the total form, which was known, and it conformed to it. They operated together, and the whole form was a set form, but at least it pre-existed, and things filled it out. So that, for instance, there's a conformity of thought. You can sometimes conform to your own thought. The idea in back of the sermon form or the done poem of that kind of intellectuality. Why they illustrated something that was the underlying thought of the poem was that all the illustrations conformed. There was not some other thing building up from everything that happened in the poem. Here things happen, and here things fill out or make rich. That's a function. Now this is conforming, but the major, the flat occasion, you give it.
Although the Avionis, the rock that lived in Madagascar, and the Moa are extinct, the camel sparrow, linked to them in size, the large sparrow, the Xenophon saw walking by a stream, was and is a symbol of justice. This bird watches his chicks with the maternal concentration, and he's been mothering the eggs at night 6 weeks. His legs are only weapon of defense. He is swifter than a horse. He has a foot hard as a horse. The leopard is not more suspicious. How could he prize for plumes and eggs of young youth, even as a riding beast, respect men hiding afterlife in ostrich skins with the right hand, making the neck move as if alive, and from a bag, the left hand, strewing grain that ostriches might be decoyed and killed? Yes, this is he whose plume was anciently the plume of justice, he whose comic ducking head is it, on his great neck revolves a compass needle nervousness when he could stand guard, and S like foragings as he is, preening the down on his leg and skin back. The egg tied to the shell and made very old, from which Castor and Pollux hatched, was an ostrich egg, and what could have been more fit for the Chinese long engraved on as a gift to an emperor who admired strange birds than this one who built his mud-made nest in dust, yet will wade in lake or sea till only the head shows? Then she cuts out some lines in a whole verse that she thought weren't up to scratch. This is impossible in the form of, in this other form of verse where everything is informing and necessary to the total form. Ostrich, 600 ostrich brains served at one banquet, the ostrich plume tent and desert spear, jewel, gorgeous, ugly eggshell goblets, 8 pairs of ostriches in harness, dramatize the meaning always missed by the externalist. The power of the visible is the invisible, as even where no tree of freedom grows, so-called brute courage knows. Heroism is exhausting, yet it contradicts the greed that did not wisely spare the harmless solitaire or great orc in its grandeur, unsolicited having swallowed up all great giant birds, but as alert gargantuan, little winged magnificent, speeding running bird. This one, remaining rebel, is the camel sparrow. I carefully avoided her voice, but to give them something like the fact, but you hear it. And what she does, of course, is to disregard the duration of syllables and count them. So you've got very odd things that happen, and you vaguely, in long lines, they are exact replicas, stanza for stanza. You vaguely recognize that there's some count, but it is not in, now here, of course, in a lyric form, these things play, and we recognize the duration of syllables. That clearly does not. Yet he is a syllabically centered man. I mean, a man whose first is nerd. And the other thing I brought him was not only Marion Moore, but he's not heard a record. I brought a record with me of Marion Moore, sort of guessing perhaps he hadn't heard it. We'd get a real kick out of it. Besides, I brought it so I could play it myself forever while I was in Europe. And the other thing was that I brought him was Coleridge, and that is that Coleridge really did understand, and I thought maybe. I really didn't bring it to Cooley, because I thought Cooley knew about Coleridge because of this sort of thing that I found in his poems. Coleridge knew how lively the quatrains became when you did these little departures in stress and syllable, and the whole thing became irregular. He thought of it as a sort of mock a primitive style, actually, I gather, from the series and ideas of the period when ancient mariner was being written. It somewhat was like ballad, but of course Coleridge didn't sing, and he wanted to give his written ballad something that he detected on those written transcripts of ballads. And
now, pardon me for being a little chicken, before you get away from it, just would you underline the difference between that Creedy thing and the Marianne Moore thing?
Marianne Moore never can, and she cannot. She's not a lyric poet, by the way. It must be obvious from reading that thing. What's the same is the real thing. Her play of syllables, it comes by the fact she doesn't pay attention to durations, and that she repeats really almost preposterously. She has to rhyme at the end of a line, because since she doesn't keep duration, the lines themselves, and some of them are so long in syllabic nature, only the rhyme tells you that you're at the end, and only it gives the terminal of the line. Now here, of course, the line itself, like you can take it to walk around a box,
if a person rhymes at the end of the line, obviously they only need to walk around a block because that's a functioning rhyme. And then she takes great pleasure in having the rhyme happen in the middle of a sentence. She plays sentence to get the counterpoint. She plays sentence against very long structures syllabically measured with a rhyme at the end of the syllabic count. And syllables are methodically counted. And she pays no attention to contour, as for instance, in another poem, I would say the word by contour. Now, in Creeley, he's playing these numbers of lines against each other, and there you're not, you're repeating, and seeing that they're entirely different when the numbers repeated, because she thinks through exactly why they're entirely different. She doesn't think through the fact that she has paid no attention to the duration of the syllables. Poets usually register this in conscience. I've also talked with Marion Ward, and she just feels that by some kind of really exciting thing, lines prove to be different when they're measured exactly. And she wasn't quite clear. Well, that's very interesting, sort of, when you wanted to say, But then you see, I knew she didn't, because when you think of duration of syllables, you would immediately start having things appear that would be a different form of related duration through the thing. That doesn't really work. It's a continuum that's punctuated by rhymes at the end of the line, and then you get the excitement by the awkward shift of these numbers. Let's get one that comes later, though. Now, that's an early one. That's a warning, and that's let's take what he got. What he gets. 82. Just friends. And the playfulness of Creeley, for instance, is integral. It's at the meaning level, and at every other level, and it's the sense I have of it is that he's got an imp on his shoulder. You know, I mean. It's not like the junkies, a monkey on his shoulder, but this boy's got an imp on his shoulder, and it always means that these things are going to go, but it guides him in a way. Desperate. Out of the table endlessly rocking, seashells and fur, I saw a face appear that called me dear. To be loved is half the battle, I thought. To be is to be better than is not. So when you're old, what will you say? You don't say, she said. That was on Thursday. Friday night I left. Haven't been back since. Everything is washed. You look warm enough. And I will wear what dresses I choose, and I will dance, and what's to you, and what's to lose. I'm free of you, you little prick, and I'm the one who can make it stick. Is this the darling I did love? Is this the mercy from above? Did open violence in the spring make my own worn self to sing?
You skipped.
You found that's where I got it wrong. This friend, 82, and I went on to 81, and I wanted to know this was just there.
It's bound of the despairing husband, you were.
Yeah, that's what I wanted.
That's eight.
Yeah, out of the table.
My wife and I adore her.
Oh, yeah, that's where I got it. No, that's what I wanted. It's 82 to 81. I see, I got over the. How did this get scrambled in here?
Well, you've got
no, he's complete there. Long enough. No, this is just, everything is warm if you look long enough.
Yeah.
But what I wanted was what it did happen in that ballad of the despairing husband at the end. That's where I got off. Because I thought the end of it was going bad. But even there, reading this thing, I can call your attention to something. I thought, to be, we're all familiar with the thing that little thing refers to. It is to be better than is not. Now, one of the things you can do with these lines, you see, when you're in the middle of a sentence, is to get this to be and then play with this expectancy and not make any parody of it at all, because it proves to be an entirely different thing. It's to be better than is not. The minute you have this possibility of calling up an association in these short lines, this is the role of breaking off a line. Now, when you find people who just, there is so much conventional breaking of lines because of people that didn't think, is anything happening when a line breaks? Well, an awfully good example is Kenneth Rexroth, whose response to seeing
syllabically measured lines, and his response to seeing lines in William Carlos Williams that had this terminal juncture was just to have it, any and everywhere, and Grenfell sort of counted through, counted syllables and broke sentences that don't have any activity. Now, actually, the activity in Rex Orthos is a different, the flow in Rex Orthos is of a very different kind, and when you read it like you read blank verse, just forgetting about the fact there are any terminals, and so if you religiously end with the word the, you know very well that that's not meaningful. You just happen to be a modern conventionalist, because if you should happen to behave as if it were notation, the Rex Orthos thing would disappear entirely, and you would find you wonder why in the world is raised in pitch, and why in the world is following this. Because you can tell right away if somebody's only notating in this form, all you have to do is conform to this the, and you're expecting something, and something's going to change, you sort of know, and you come down, that's where you find yourself really in the course of something that says the floor needs to be swept. the person didn't mean you to say the floor needs to be swept. Sometimes you find, in both cases, you'll find notation. For instance, one person whose notation is off and off is Wallace Stevens' notation. Because the lines form a tempo, and because they're not exactly notated, if you listen to him read and try to follow on the page, you'll find those line ends really, the measure of the lines very confusing indeed for the method of reading. Although in general, I feel I haven't, actually since I've read Wallace Stevens for years, and it was based on a page, his notation, I simply have a different reading than he has. But a real error in reading, a real error in notation, is the one that is to be seen in Kenneth Rexroth's work, where he just did not perceive what. So he thought this was, this is what we all ought to be doing. And that isn't it at all. If there's no revelation in meaning and also in the feeling the movement of the poem to raise pitch here and have an increased breath, the first word the following line, then you've almost sure you've got somebody you do have to stop to read it in some other way, and you discover that the person was just conforming to modern conventions, and had they really been notating what they heard in their ear, they might have been writing in some other form. Okay, let's get...
Would you say that that kind of relatively short line and lyric form, does it, in the sense that you're talking about, he's non-organic, you say, personality?
Informing goes on here in Creeley's words. But it doesn't tend to branch out like an organism. But these things are free as independent units, and they put into play one against the other. The line is much more separate. Now, this is an entire. You're going to find things in Creeley. Creeley is going to yield to the other interpretation too, because he does keep it continuing. But I feel more of. Immediate interplay between lines instead of a growing thing between the lines. This sounds like a thesis, and in any event, you can fall flat on your face on a thesis, that's why I want to just rise it. This poem, even being that short, and the whole real interest being that parts of this contained a statement play against other parts. Now, that's the opposite of needing, that's the thing. You can have echoes and anticipations of something here. But leading, of course, is leading on to a construct where either Olson or I are going to be opening some big thing we want to keep in a large equilibrium. We want a big structure of equilibriums with lots of different things. Now, Queeby really doesn't name it that. Queeby, for instance, gets profundities later. There must be one poem that's Hill in here.
No,
it isn't. That, I think that was the complaint I had about this anthology, is that it really included nothing. It showed the gathering. Yes, I think it is. Do you have a form of women? I think the door is related to Christabel, which I read aloud to Creeley. someplace crossing my mind a couple of days ago. I had another thought. I've always puzzled in ways that it was one of the only poems I've ever had dedicated to me in the first place, plus it was one of the only disturbing dedications. It was sent to me in a letter, and now there are several meanings of dedications. Dedications are often, my dedications are mostly that the poem has the double role of being a letter to the person, or a celebration of the person, or an homage, and then it's called an homage. In Creeley's case, it came really as a sort of gift to me, and then I couldn't read the poem. Because it was, again, it was the same prohibition. It was charged with some, I was afraid it was charged with some sort of information or reason for being written. Well, I have never settled in my mind why it was dedicated. At least it was dedicated because of Coleridge. It was dedicated in Creeley's terms because it was the first long poem he wrote. And his whole idea of me was that I could write a long poem. But I think that, and I think another part of it was that he had begun to develop the idea of the lady, which was comparable to the figure of the first beloved author and sometimes the lady in my own poetry. And this is something that Olson doesn't stress, but Creeley found very valuable in his own terms, because he had begun to take on some of the traditions of romance and fairy tale, for instance, as he does in a little poem on page, the one, The Three Ladies and the Tree, which just precedes that. The Three Ladies. I dreamt I saw three ladies in a tree, and the one that I saw most clearly showed her favors unto me, and I saw her leg above the knee. But when the time for love was come, and of readiness I had made myself, while my head and shoulders dropped the other two like an unquiet dew. What were these two but the one? I saw in their faces, I heard in their words, wonder, wonders, it was the undoing of me, they came down to see. Sister, they said to her, who upon my lap sat complacent, expected, he is dead in his head, and we have errands, have errands. O song of wistful life, life shows, for it stops, nobody knows, and two are one, and three to meet, and to look is not to read for. O one, two, three, O one, two, three, the old lady sat in three. Well, this occasion to reply, for me, at the time it was written, those are not chronological in the anthology, it was written just before the anthology came out. And that will be the reply, just to give you the idea of poets replying to each other. There's a marvelous one in your traditions of English literature, which is the exchange between Raleigh and between Marlowe and Raleigh at one point. And after that poem of Creeley, I wrote a dancing concerns a form of woman. Poets in a company of four arrange themselves for me, feet first, Coleridge and Creeley, next and head next, bodily Emily from where she hid, but gladly dancing. And the bold lady, who are you, I said, in the name of four lines, limbs, writing, and poetry. You forgot, she replied, and led me backwards through magic part, and consequently that my foot in each first count, my lament, livens the tune, rearranges their feet and faces, gives four walls to the room. Now how good of my friend to go wholly enthralled to her, and yet to remember cannily, while dancing, to reach round forward to what is behind us, to find through Coleridge's sight some likely remembrance of me being there, for I weren't, and his lifting the skirt of things this way to show the lady's human side, and then recover the lady's side and me. I replied to this form of women,
showed him these things under oath and privately, that now he must take the most of and need show to thee.
Oh, we're back at that witching hour of half past 12 or something. And I don't know whether we got any place particularly.
Could you do what you just before you? Yeah. Could you do a little bit with, say, some of my games that are playing line?
Well, I don't know about like and dislike. We'll just talk about what the line does and why it has to do it. You'll find Ginsberg trying to do things other people do, and maybe I'm going to see if it's in this anthology. Because let's say a person like Corso is much more his own poet, whereas Ginsberg wants to run a particular range and has sort of a career in mind. Well, I was wondering if there wasn't in here, I don't really know in this anthology, I was wondering if there wasn't some poem in which he's trying to do, you see, he was in San Francisco at the very end of the very, at the main beat period, and he knew Kerouac Queeley was. And he knew Kerouac and Ginsberg, and Ginsberg particularly tried to do a few Queeley poems, and then you really do see what are Ginsberg's difficulties there.